This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at Yale. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Healthline features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. And if you're interested in learning more about cancer-specific types of cancer or listening to a past edition, all of our shows are now available at the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org.
Today we're joined by Dr. Mario Snowell, who is Associate Professor and Vice Chief of Medical Oncology here at the Yale Cancer Center. And Mario is a specialist in the treatment of patients with advanced melanoma.
Mario, why don't we start out by talking a little bit about what is melanoma?
Melanoma is actually a cancer of pigmented cells of the skin, although there are pigmented cells all over the body. It's one of the most dangerous skin cancers. It's the one that has the highest propensity to travel to other parts of the body. Melanoma can start in almost any place in the body where you have pigmented cells. So although most people think that it starts in the skin, it can also start in the eye, for example, or in the inside the nose, or even in the rectum, for example.
So maybe let's just take a step back, Mario. When we typically talk about skin cancer, melanoma is a little bit different than the other so-called, you know, true skin cancers?
Yes, that's correct. The other skin cancers tend not to spread through the bloodstream and the lymphatics to other organs of the body. So when they're discovered, they can be resected and cured. Melanoma usually presents just as a, for example, as a spot on the skin. However, those cells, even after the primary cancer has been resected, those cells could have traveled to other parts of the body. And maybe a year later, or 2 years later, or 3 years later, on routine CT scans, we might find a tumor in the lungs or in the liver, which might actually be a melanoma that came from the original cancer on the skin.
And the typical causes for melanoma?
At the moment, the major risk factor is sun exposure, but there are probably other causes which we have not identified yet.
And so are there genetic factors that may contribute to the development of melanoma?
There are genetic factors that contribute to melanoma. There are defects in certain genes, for example, that can predispose to melanoma and certain families that can have a propensity for melanoma. But for the most part, most melanomas are spontaneous, meaning there is no specific familial genetic defect that causes the melanoma in that patient.
I want to talk a little bit more about sun exposure. I mean, how much, we're all exposed to the sun. How much sun exposure are you talking about?
I actually can't answer that question. I don't think we know. There's certainly a correlation with sunburns in early childhood, but We don't actually know the amount of sun exposure that leads to melanoma.
Although, isn't there an association between people who live closer to the equator and the potential risk of melanoma, as opposed to say those of us who live here in New England in the Northeast region?
There is, and there's also an association between, for example, development of melanoma and your ethnic background. For example, so. Many of the patients that we see with melanoma are fair-skinned, have light eyes, have Northern European backgrounds, and therefore are more sensitive to sun exposure. But again, we don't have yet a clear handle on the epidemiology and the causes of melanoma.
So I guess fact or fiction, do African Americans have a reduced or no incidence of melanoma?
African Americans can get melanoma, although they often don't get melanomas of the skin. They get melanomas, for example, underneath their fingernails. They can get melanomas on the soles of their hands and feet. Those are called acral melanomas. And they can get what are called mucosal melanomas, melanomas that arise in non-sun exposed areas.
Can you tell us a little bit about what to look for? I mean, people that are in the listening audience, we'd like them to have some idea of things that they should bring to the attention of their doctor.
Could you repeat that question, Ken?
It would be my pleasure. What does melanoma look like?
Melanoma is a, I apologize for that. Melanoma is a, it's hard to, these are things that are primarily seen by dermatologists and not by medical oncologists. So I have to say that in all my career, I've seen very few primary melanomas. But in fact, a changing mole, a new mole, or moles that have irregular borders are about a centimeter in size and have variations in color within the mole are suspicious. And I think that anybody that has a changing mole, a new mole, or any mole with these features should see a dermatologist immediately and have it checked out.
And how do they make the diagnosis once they see it? What happens then?
They generally do a biopsy, and that biopsy is sent to a to a pathology laboratory. We, in fact, have an excellent dermatopathology laboratory here at Yale, and under the microscope, one can see malignant cells, malignant pigmented cells.
And who typically would do the biopsy, Mari? Would it be the dermatologist or the dermatologic surgeon? Or could either one of them perform the biopsy?
Either one of them could. Most of these, I think, are done by dermatologists. However, once the initial lesion is resected and found to be melanoma, these patients are usually referred to plastic surgeons because at that point, a wide excision needs to be done. And we can discuss additional primary treatment.
And the reason for doing a wide excision?
There have been studies done to show that at least 1 to 2 centimeter margins. 2 centimeter margins for lesions that are deeper than 1 millimeter are necessary. Otherwise, you have a high rate of local recurrence.
Murray, when someone who's had melanoma, what are some of the things that you would consider if you saw the patient in terms of the risk of it recurring? And do you have any strategies or any treatments to try to reduce the risk?
That's an excellent question. The risk for there are two kinds of recurrences. For example, you can have a new melanoma. So if you had one melanoma, you can have another melanoma sometime in your life, and the risk of that is around 10%. So it's very important for people who have had primary melanomas resected to continue to see their dermatologist on a regular basis in order to detect new lesions early. But the most dangerous kind of recurrence is the ones in which the melanoma has already spread to other parts of the body, but is not yet, those lesions are not yet seen on CT scans. So we follow these people every 3 months with chest x-rays, blood work, and exams to determine whether the melanoma at some point will recur in the lungs, the liver, or other places. Now, the risks for that are really related to features that we see at the time of resection. So how deep the melanoma is, whether the melanoma has actually spread to the local lymph nodes, and we do that by doing what's called a sentinel node biopsy and determining whether there's melanoma in those lymph nodes, and also a feature that we see under the microscope called ulceration. So if a lesion is deep and it's ulcerated, and if there are regional nodes involved, the risk that that melanoma will show up in other parts of the body later is actually quite high.
So in those patients who you would label as high risk, what would then be the normal recommendations for that individual?
At this time, there's only one drug approved by the Food and Drug Administration to reduce the risk of recurrence. It's a drug called interferon alpha. It's given by vein for 5 days for 4 weeks in a row, and then it's self-injected for 3 times a week for up to a year. There have been 3 randomized clinical trials of interferon, and in each one, it's been shown that interferon delays the time until the melanoma recurs. And there's equivocal data that melanoma can also increase overall survival. In other words, reduce the risk of recurrence in some of those patients.
Now, what kind of a drug is interferon?
Interferon is actually a cytokine. It's a messenger between cells of the immune system. And when we give interferon, we believe that we activate the immune system to eliminate residual melanoma cells. We also believe that the interferon can have direct effects on melanoma cells and may directly kill those, some of those cells.
So again, I guess to emphasize to the listeners out there, the point of the interferon treatment is to try to basically kill off any residual tumor cells that we might not be able to visualize or see or feel.
That's correct. Before the melanoma is resected, those cells might have traveled in the bloodstream to other organs in the body. But remember, CT scans can only detect lesions that are a centimeter in size. They can't detect single cells. So those cells might be there, and we can't see them on diagnostic studies. So just as you point out, the role of interferon is to eliminate those cells that we can't yet see but might grow later in the future.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. And we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. And please stay tuned to learn more information on the treatment of melanoma with Dr. Mario Schnall from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a medical minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. There are over 10 million cancer survivors in the U.S., and the numbers keep growing. Completing treatment for cancer is a very exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. Following treatment, the return to normal activities and relationships may be difficult, and cancer survivors may face other long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. The Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center provides a multidisciplinary approach to helping cancer survivors. The team includes a physician, nurse specialist, nutritionist, exercise specialist, and a clinical social worker who work together to help care for cancer survivors. Please call 203-785-CARE. That's 203-785-CARE for more information or to make an appointment at the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Red Hsu, and our guest, Dr. Mario Schnall, who's an expert in the treatment of melanoma at the Yale Cancer Center. Mario, we started talking about the immune system and about this immune therapy interferon. What is the relationship, the interaction between the immune system and this cancer?
That's a very complex question,
and that's the reason I asked it.
we certainly know that there are some patients that have waxing and waning of their cancer, suggesting that the immune system is involved. And we know, and we've known for many years, that in patients who have advanced melanoma, a small percentage of those patients will actually respond to immune therapies. So we do believe that there's a role for the immune system in surveillance, for example, in perhaps identifying and eliminating some residual cells. We certainly know that if we activate the immune system in a small number of patients, we can see tumors regress.
We'll obviously, I think, talk more about this kind of in the last segment when we talk about research and new treatments that I know you're working on, Mario, especially focusing on developing new immunotherapies. Maybe we can just take a step back. So say, for instance, when a patient presents with melanoma, so are their family members at increased risk for developing melanoma, and should their family members be more carefully screened and evaluated?
As we've talked about, there are a small percentage of families in which there is a genetic risk for melanoma. And in fact, I believe there's a test now for that gene. We don't routinely recommend it. Most of the time, it's a good idea to have routine skin screening for everybody. So if a family member comes in and has melanoma, and if there's somebody with light skin and light eyes and are at risk, we recommend that they have their family member screened. Not specifically because we know that there's a genetic defect, but because it's just a good idea. And in fact, often we see patients whose fathers have had melanoma or whose brothers have had melanoma. it does occur quite often.
Now, you've really been instrumental at developing a multidisciplinary approach to treating patients with melanoma. Perhaps you can tell our listeners what that really involves. You know, who are the team members that come together and evaluate and develop new treatment strategies for patients with melanoma?
We do treat this as a multidisciplinary disease. We have a tumor board, which meets every Thursday morning. It's led by Dr. Stephen Arian, who's the dean of plastic surgeons for melanoma. He sees approximately half of all the melanoma cases in the state and has been focusing on this problem for many years. We have other surgeons in the group, another plastic surgeon, Dr. Deepak Narayan. A number of dermatologists come to our group, dermatopathologists, pathologists, radiologists, and medical oncologists. We work together to treat the cancer because at different times in the course of the disease, surgery will be needed, treatment for advanced disease will be needed, and the dermatologists, obviously, are needed to continue to follow these patients throughout their lives.
We have an email I want to share with you. This is from Charles, who lives in Manchester. He said, my physician told me that my melanoma may recur. What does that mean? And he also writes here, is there anything that I can do or any treatments to prevent recurrence? And finally, he writes, how will I know if my melanoma does recur in other parts of the body?
That's a multi-part question. So first of all, as we talked about before, we determine the risk for recurrence by several factors at the time of presentation of the primary. The depth of the lesion, whether the lesion is ulcerated under the microscope, whether there are regional nodes involved. And if the patient is at high risk for recurrence, we monitor them on average about every 3 months, routine exams, chest x-rays, and blood work. Patients who are at high risk for recurrence, what that means is that we believe that there's a fairly good chance that at some point in the future, and that could be 3 months from that date or it could be 25 years from that date, we may find melanoma in other parts of their body. Most of the time, melanoma is detected on a routine exam, on a chest x-ray, or it can be detected because the patient develops symptoms. Now, I can't tell you what symptoms those are because it could be any symptom. Melanoma can travel to almost any part of the body. So it's important to just routinely follow these folks for recurrence.
Well, yeah, one of the questions he didn't ask, but perhaps was thinking, are there any routine tests that he should have done or someone with melanoma should have done after the diagnosis?
Depending on the risk, the standard of care is to obtain chest x-rays, blood work, and do exams every 3 months. We don't routinely recommend CT scans or PET scans, but at our center, we do obtain baseline CT scans for patients who are at high risk for recurrence. And if symptoms occur or if we have abnormal findings on chest x-ray or on exam, we obtain CAT scans to determine whether the melanoma has spread to other parts of their body.
Mario, in the case of colon cancer and prostate cancer and some other diseases, there are some blood tests that one can take to see whether or not maybe the cancer has come back. Is there any such blood test for melanoma?
There is not. We don't have a specific blood test for recurrence of melanoma. We can do routine laboratory work, and sometimes we can measure whether there are abnormalities in liver function. Now, those are not specific to melanoma. They could be from another cause, but certainly if we see it, that prompts us to do a CAT scan, for example, to see if there are lesions in the liver.
For the person diagnosed with early stage melanoma, I mean, I think people hear the word cancer, they hear the word melanoma, and it's obviously very shocking and scary. But did the majority of people with early melanoma do well, in your experience?
The majority of people with early melanoma do well. People with thin lesions have a low risk for recurrence and are probably cured of their disease. But even patients with very thin melanomas can have a risk of recurrence of up to 20% over a 10-year period. So even patients with thin melanomas need continued follow-up.
And are there any practical tips for those who may not present with melanoma, but perhaps might be at increased risk because they're fair-skinned, blue-eyed, have a lot of sun exposure?
I would just advise people who have fair skin to protect themselves from the sun, to use sunscreen and hats when they're out. That doesn't mean they can't be in the sun, but they certainly should avoid sunburns. They should see dermatologists on a routine basis, somewhere between 2 to 3 times a year. Some people recommend more often. And to examine their body once a month and look for any moles that are changing in color and size or that are new.
Well, again, we'd like to thank Dr. Schnall for being involved in part two of our show. We're going to be coming back in about a minute after a survivor story, and please stay tuned to join us. Again, if you have questions, you can email us at healthline@yale.edu.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Fairfield.
I visited a walk-in clinic on Christmas Eve in 1999 because I thought I had the flu. The doctor there suspected that it was something more serious, and as he examined my belly, he found a mass. I was referred to Dr. Tom Rutherford, a gynecologic oncologist and researcher at Yale Cancer Center, where I had surgery and received chemotherapy for stage 2 ovarian cancer. Because of early detection, excellent treatment, and the benefit of the latest research, I recently celebrated 6 years as a cancer survivor. Today, I'm a fervent believer that women should pay attention to changes in their bodies and should not be reluctant to tell their physicians any concerns they have, even those they feel might sound trivial. Early detection is the best way to cure cancer.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with Dr. Ed Chu and our guest, Dr. Mario Schnall, who's an expert in melanoma at the Yale Cancer Center.
Mario, in the last segment, we had touched just very, very briefly about the role of the immune system and perhaps immune defects as a cause for melanoma, and also the potential for interferon and other immune-based treatments for melanoma. I know you're working very, very closely with, you know, our investigator scientists in the immunobiology program here at the Yale Cancer Center to try to understand better the mechanisms to develop new therapies. Can you expand on that?
I can. First, a little background information. Probably for now over 20 years, we've been using a drug called interleukin-2. It's, again, like interferon, a cytokine, a messenger between lymphocytes, and using it to treat patients with melanoma. With interleukin-2, we found that approximately 15% of patients will have some tumor regression, and maybe 5% of patients might develop a long, durable response to the interleukin-2. In fact, some of these patients have been out beyond 10 years without recurrence of their disease, and we've seen several of those here at Yale. However, even over the past 20 years, we've made very few improvements in the treatment of patients with interleukin-2. And over the past 20 years, we've identified the mechanisms by which IL-2 works, and also the reasons why IL-2 doesn't work. And one of those, for example, is production of cells of certain cytokines that, well, let's go back. We feel that the tumor itself produces a counterattack against lymphocytes that attempt to get rid of the tumor. And so we're trying to find ways to block the tumor from having this counterattack against the immune response. And we've identified some of those factors, and now we have inhibitors against some of those factors that we're testing in the laboratory.
Hmm. And again, you're working with Richard Fovell, who I think many people view one of the preeminent immunobiologists in the country, if not the world, to try to dissect out these mechanisms.
We're doing studies that are funded by one of the projects in the SPOR grant related to inhibition of TGF-beta. TGF-beta is a substance produced by tumors that can limit the effectiveness of the immune system. It also induces the production of regulatory lymphocytes. These are lymphocytes which block the effect of the good lymphocytes. And if we can inhibit TGF-beta, we might actually improve the function of the immune system and actually improve the activity of interleukin-2. Those studies are being done in the laboratory first, and if the laboratory studies are positive, then we'll try and bring those concepts into the clinic.
Now, as you just mentioned a little while ago, this is part of this project is part of what's called the SPOR grant. Maybe you can explain to the listeners out there what that means. What is that?
A SPOR grant is a special grant awarded by the National Cancer Institute, which focuses on a specific disease area. So it's generally four projects specifically, with several developmental projects funded to take basic science ideas and bring them into the clinic. So to do translational science, to do the science that's necessary to bring a very basic concept into clinical application. And Yale has one of, I believe it's four skin spores in the country, recently awarded approximately a year ago. The TGF-beta project, which we spoke about, is one of those projects. There are three other projects within the spore focusing on diagnosis, for example, and also on other approaches to treatment, one being, for example, turning on tumor suppressor genes.
Obviously, we here at the Yale Cancer Center are very proud of the work that you're doing, because this is actually the first spore that we've received here at the Yale Cancer Center. And just maybe to emphasize the point, only NCI-designated cancer centers are eligible to even apply for such grants. So it really is a very special stamp of approval for the work that you folks are doing in the melanoma program.
I think we should recognize Dr. Ruth Haliban, who is the director of the SPORE and a world-renowned molecular biologist who's been working in the melanoma field for many years. She was actually the instigator of the SPORE and actually responsible for generating the collaborations among the many Yale scientists that it took in order to write the SPORE and actually win approval from the NCI.
And I guess the other key person as well would be Dr. Bob Tigelar from dermatology, who really also has played an instrumental role.
Yes, thank you. I was about to mention Dr. Tigelar's name. Thank you.
All right, so I want to ask a little bit more about tumor suppressor genes. What does that mean? Is that a way to turn cancer cells on and off?
We know, and this is not just in melanoma, it's in many cancers, that there are genes in cancers that are supposed to be on and genes that are supposed to be off. And there are certain genes that are supposed to be on which would essentially turn off the cancer. But for whatever reason, when we think we actually know some of those reasons, those genes are actually off. They're called tumor suppressors. If they were turned on, the cancer would not be able to grow or function as a mm-hmm. cancer. So we can turn on those genes again using a number of agents that are now available. These agents are being used to treat blood cancers at this time. One of them, for example, is 5-azacitidine, and there's another class of drug called HDAC inhibitors that can also turn on these tumor suppressor genes. So we're attempting to identify whether these agents work in melanoma and how they work.
Mario, you have a number of very interesting, exciting clinical trials that you're offering to patients with advanced melanoma. How can listeners out there access that information?
We have a website which lists the clinical trials that we have ongoing at the Cancer Center, and they can also call, we can, our research nurses, for example, and our research nurses can describe the clinical trials that are ongoing. We have trials related to activation of the immune system, trials related to turning on tumor suppressor genes, and we have trials of novel agents, for example, an immunotoxin, which is a specific drug which can be targeted directly to the melanoma cell.
Well, if you have, for both Ed and Mario, what phone number should people call? Do you have a particular number or a website?
Well, they can certainly go to the website, www.yalecancercenter.org, and then presumably there's a link to go right to the melanoma program, and then there'll be a listing of all the exciting clinical trials. I think that may be the best way to go.
That's perfect.
I believe that's correct.
All right. If you have questions for Dr. Mario Schnell for Healthline, I encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. Mario, I want to thank you for joining us on Healthline.
Yeah, Mario, thanks for joining us. It's been a terrific session, and we hope to have you back in the future to tell us what new is going on. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Please join us next week when we'll focus on radiation therapy for the treatment of women's cancers. And our special guest will be Dr. Susan Higgins. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.